Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 365, being recorded on the 10th of February, 2021, with special guests Tyler Peterson and Matthew Garrett. I'm Sujit, and our team's with me. I have Evan, and of course, our special guests, Tyler and Matthew, who we're going to get to in just a minute. But before that, let's just cover a few updates this week. Evan, I believe it's kind of a dry week, I noticed.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here. The two things that I did want to bring up, and actually totally coincidence, these are both sort of around, you know, one's around government and one's around, you know, certification, which sort of plays into government. But first off, the Azure app, which I don't know if any of you guys have used. I don't use it much, but it is really nice for the once in a while when I'm out and about to like, oh crap, I gotta delete something, turn something off, whatever it is, to have that app on your mobile device. And now it supports Azure Government, which is great. Although it occurred to me after that, there's probably a partial audience because a lot of those folks aren't allowed to have those devices, depending on the cloud. But it, you know, conceptually, right, in the Azure Government space, there's a lot of public business as well. It just happens to be government entities. So, but yeah, nice benefit there. The other thing is, and this is sort of a theme in cloud, right? One of the reasons customers like cloud is because then they don't have to manage all the certifications, they don't have to manage all the inspections, they don't have to handle all that stuff. And we've just had, we've now expanded our services that are covered by the HITRUST certification, right, which allows more end customers to be able to leverage, who need that certification, need that capability, to be able to leverage those services that are covered by that. And again, that's just sort of expanding the umbrella that what people can use.
Cool. And I had a quick one. I thought, Evan, I thought you were going to bring this up because it's in Azure Networking.
Oh, I missed it.
And Althea Tour, who's a pro PM in the Azure Networking team, what the team did is they published the Azure DDoS Protection 2020 year in review. So they looked at all of the DDoS attacks that happened in 2020, and especially because it was the COVID pandemic year, and increasing, and they saw a marked increase in these attacks during that time, when especially when COVID first hit, like when, you know, in the March timeframe, April timeframe last year, they found, you know, the number of DDoS, because everyone locked down, everybody's at home. Yep. I guess they were bored and they said, okay, let me see if I can DDoS Azure. I don't know what the deal was with that, but there was this big increase, you know, of attacks. And they said on average, they mitigated 200,000 attacks in the whole year, which is pretty phenomenal.
I actually didn't see that. I'd seen some internal chatter about that, but I had not actually seen it. Sort of somebody pulled it all together. That's it's amazing.
So there's a lot of other details. They've broken down, you know, all the various kinds of countries that initiated it and whatnot. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
Great. So that's it for the news this week. So let's get over to our special guests, Tyler and Matthew. Thank you so much for joining us. Tyler, why don't you start off, introduce yourselves, and then after you, Matthew, you can do the same. Thank you.
Perfect. Yeah, my name is Tyler Peterson. I'm an apps and infra CSA here in the Pacific Northwest. And yeah, I've been a deep background in networking and kind of platform infrastructure, a lot of enterprise scale and VWAN stuff lately. Been doing a lot of projects with Matt and got pulled into this OpenHack. So I'll let Matt introduce himself and we'll kind of start talking about our project.
Sure. Thank you. My name is Matthew Garrett. Like Tyler, I am also an apps and infra CSA based out of the Bay Area, but cover similar types of accounts in the high tech world. I also have a strong background in networking. I come from Cisco before Microsoft. So that was kind of my bread and butter along with other data centers and let's call it private cloud. And then we have one member that couldn't make it today, but that's Nils Franzens, which I believe you've actually had on at least two times on the Azure podcast.
Oh, yeah.
He's a rock star.
Yes.
He's amazing. Yeah, no doubt about that. We have to get him back on to talk about some of his new stuff he's been working on. But tell me about this project now. I thought the name was very interesting. Bellhop, I believe it's called. So give us some background and, you know, what that project is, how it came about, and then maybe we can take it from there.
Sure. So the initial inkling for the project came along when I was working with a customer, and they are very, well, maybe not incredibly unique, but what they do is they have a SaaS platform or services that they offer. But some of the ways that they deliver that platform is they have a subscriptions that they stand up for customers, and they give the customer access to these subscriptions, deploy their platform on top of it, and now that becomes the customers, and they can do manipulations on that. They can change things around. So, for example, there's app services running in there. There are SQL databases. They can choose to make that a SQL managed instance. It could be SQL PaaS. They can raise and lower the tier depending on the needs or how heavily they're driving that version that they're running in their instance. And additionally, these are a lot of dev test kind of workloads. And so the question came from customers of the customer and said, hey, we have all these things running. It's working great. You help us if anything breaks. But because some of these are dev test workloads and we leave Friday night and we come back on Monday, is there any way that we can do something around cost savings, scaling down these, meaning not turning them off? They all have to remain running for the application to function and do its job, but certainly they don't need to be at the tier that they're running at all the time. And we would love to save some money instead of leaving a 64 vCore SQL server running when no one's or very few people are doing anything Friday and Saturday. So that was the initial ask. And so the challenge to me was, they had some conceptual idea of Azure Functions, and maybe they originally thought about, could I do this in a runbook? And I know PowerShell, but what's a way to build something that, from a framework perspective, covers the unique ask? And the unique ask, really, if you boil it down, is I need to change the tier of something dynamically. Yeah, now, in Azure, go ahead, Tyler.
No, I was just going to say, in Azure, we do cover, you know, scaling out resources to cover, you know, increased load. We handle that very well. But scaling up or down tiers, especially in regards to cost savings automatically, is something that we don't offer kind of across the board. And so as part of this growth open hack that the customer success unit put on, Nils, Matthew, and myself got together, and how could we fully flesh out this POC that you delivered for a customer into kind of a product we could use to scale between floors, for the Bellhop reference, for our products. And so we came up, and we have the three working ones currently, which are app services and then SQL database and SQL Elastic pools, all based on tags. So you tag your resources, and the engine will pick them up and then tell the scalar modules to resize based on your input.
That's cool, because I actually ran into this just yesterday, in that was working on a Redis cache issue, and you know, the customer needed more capacity. And you know, again, I'm sort of a generalist these days, although I still love networking and SQL, but you know, I don't get to hang out in any one service as often as I used to anymore. And you know, I said, oh yeah, well, we need to get more compute resources to Redis. I said, let's scale it out. They said, you can't. Redis is just a scale up, scale down construct, unless you want to go change your code to allow multi-shard. And this, you know, this particular customer, their code just didn't support that today, and they didn't want to make the change. And you know, and so then we're sitting there going, wow, okay, so that makes sense. Now, how do they manage it, right? From that perspective, it's not just as simple as creating an autoscale. So that sounds like the scenario exactly like what y'all are talking about then.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I wanted to kind of ask, I know, like, if you do the scale out, right? That's when you add more instances. Is that what scale out is? Yeah. So if you do scale out, I think it's, you know, it's kind of managed very gracefully from an application perspective, right? The applications are not, they just kind of, you know, the load balancer just adds more instances to the pool or whatever, and same with scale down. But when you change tiers, I can imagine that's more disruptive, right, from an application perspective. So how is that managed? Like, how do you guys think about that? That was that not a concern for this particular use case?
Yes, so you're absolutely correct. And the short answer is that all Azure resources handle that type of operation a little differently. For example, when I'm resizing SQL, what happens in the back end in most of the circumstances is it will move, kind of start up the new tier that you want in the background, kind of do a synchronization. And then there's a brief blip where it switches over to the new tier that has been resized. And so a lot of times, if you've written your application code properly to handle things like a retry, that's for the most part not an issue. VMs, on the other hand, are a different story, because to resize those, it usually takes, you got to turn the VM off and you got to turn the VM back on. And so that can be much more disruptive. So certainly a part of this is making sure that whatever you're doing is able to sustain that disruption. I think just the way that a lot of resources are going to handle that, there's going to be some sort of disconnect, whether it's for a fraction of a second or maybe a few seconds longer. But definitely, because we're not behind a load balancer and we're simply adding more places to balance between, now that becomes more of a challenge. But I think you bring up a really good point, which is if we're looking at dev test scenarios, nine times out of 10, it's not going to be an issue, because these are not going to blow up a production environment. And the goal here is cost savings, because no one's going to be using them for a period of time.
Yeah, the idea really is based all around tags. So you have your resize enable, which is true, which would trigger this to actually pick these resources up, and then a start and end time. So right now, this is really based on a schedule and targeted to those dev test environments where you know exactly at, you know, Friday at 6 p.m., my dev team walks out the door and we want to turn down all of this down to, you know, from a S3 app service plan all the way down to like a basic app service plan, and turn that down just to keep it warm over the weekend while you'll scale back up on Monday. And so I don't think the interrupts to the application running are going to be as much of a concern at this point, since it's a scheduled action.
And so I've actually done this. I have some personal stuff that I do where I have a server that I scale up, you know, for the weekends, and it scales down, you know, on weekdays and whatnot. And, you know, there are some scripts out there that do it. There's some ways of, but it was painful trying to figure this out. So with the Bellhop solution, I just tag them and the service can figure out, okay, do I have to build rules as well that go with my tags, or how does that end up working?
So it's really a framework is how we really like to put this up as. And so it's a couple of main functions: the engine function, which is written in C#, a storage queue in the middle, and then the scaler function on the other end. And so then, yeah, we support the three resource types we discussed. So SQL database, SQL Elastic Pools, and app service plans right now. More are coming. And so we have common tags. And so those are the resize enabled true, and then start time and end time. And then each service that we support has required tags based on the service itself, because there are variations for each service. Mm-hmm. So the scaler, the engine, and the scaler function, that code is written so flexible that never changes. Then the scaler function, every time that pulls a message out of the queue, will read in the resource type. And if there's a module in our repo that supports that resource type, it'll import that function and execute that scale. So this is a completely extensible solution.
Yeah.
We invite people to write their own scaler modules. The module can do whatever you code it to, and our engine will just pass it the parameters.
So you're functionally, it sounds like what you're sort of using the tags are is your parameters, right, that you're passing into the scaler function. And that makes it a declarative thing. It means I can do it in the portal via CLI. Like I don't have to go. I mean, I should be submitting a PR on my side to make this happen, right? Infrastructure is code. But I don't have to really recompile. I don't have to push anything out. And I'm just using this central you know, component at that point, and I'm just setting tags as I need to, and it just handles it.
That's yeah, nice. And maybe I'll break it down much more what we're doing in code. So there's two pieces. We, as Tyler mentioned, we have C#, right? And the reason we chose C# is there's a lot of different advantages depending on which way you go in code. PowerShell and the PowerShell SDK is very good at management operations, things like scaling, creating new resources, deleting resources. But if you want to do things like reading into settings, it doesn't really do that. It's not going to be able to give you keys out of Key Vault or settings out of app configuration, at least not without falling back to the .NET components. So the reason the engine is in that is now I can use managed identities. I can do things like calling Azure Resource Graph, and I can look and I can call out, and Tyler pointed this out, the top level tag is resource enabled is true. So I can look across all the resources and grab those, and then I can iterate through them. And then the next thing I can do is I can look at their kind. So the kind is Microsoft.SQL/database or Microsoft.compute/VM. And based on that, now we're going to start sending these into that queue. Now, the reason there's a queue is we can easily fan this out really, really large scale using queue. We're using storage queues right now, but you could use Event Hub or Service Bus. And then we have a trigger where that the function that actually does the scaling is triggering off of things deposited in that queue. And so when it gets that, what it's going to do, and Tyler alluded to this, is now we're in PowerShell land, because what we're going to do to scale that is going to be really well handled by the PowerShell SDK.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so there's two pieces here. And what it's going to do is going to look at that kind.
Didn't miss PowerShell. Good call. Good catch.
What's that?
I just missed calling out that the scalar side was PowerShell, so good catch.
Oh, yes. Yes. So, and the reason. Yeah, so what we're going to do is now there's a scalars folder, and that folder has a structure where essentially it is the name of the kind. So the folder would be Microsoft.SQL and then a subfolder called databases. And in there, there's always a function .PS1. And that is the scalar for that resource. So it's always this framework. It's easy to extend. And in there is the unique code for a SQL database. And it's going to be different for a VM. And it's going to be different for an Elasticpool. But it's always the same. It's always the same module that it exports. And so the top level scalar is essentially going to load in that function and call the scale function. And it's going to do two things. If I'm scaling down based on the time frame, meaning now I'm in that magic window of start time and end time, it's going to really have to look at that resource graph and map that to what the tags would be in the PowerShell world. So that is what takes the most time. And what you're going to do if you're building a custom scalar is that mapping operation. And I'm going to save those. And the way it saves those, it appends tags onto the resource of save state dash whatever that tag is. And so now this is really cost effective, e.g. free, to save that information onto your resource and remember where it was. Now, the beauty of this is the scale back up is super simple, because all we're doing is stripping that prefix of save state dash, and we're using that as a hash table and splatting it into the scale up command inside PowerShell, and we're literally done. It's a one liner to scale that back up because we've saved it as the tags we need to scale back up. So hopefully that was a good deeper dive into the mechanics.
Yeah, no, that really helps. Where did so maybe I missed something as you're setting this up. So you've got this service that's running. If I wanted to implement so obviously if I wanted to do a new service, that's, you know, an extension to the functions you got. But if I wanted to actually run this, you know, do I have to stand this up somewhere? Is this something you're hosting for me? Like, how does that part work?
Initially, this does live in a public GitHub repo, and so it is the Azure Bellhop repo. Gotcha. And so, yeah, you clone this down, and there's a deploy script in PowerShell. You deploy this into your subscription, and it'll either create a new resource group with a subset of resources that it deploys, you can use an existing resource group. And then through that, gotcha. You do get a system assigned managed identity, storage account for the queue. You get the app service plan that will run your functions, and then it will zip deploy your packages, and we put application insights on it to monitor the functions as well. So that's kind of what gets deployed as the hot package. Although looking to the future, we are looking to potentially, you know, SaaSify this or, you know, host this for our customers in some way. That's definitely on our roadmap.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's easy to do, but I do it myself. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. How do you know how low to scale down to? Like, is that one of the properties in the tags? Because I imagine, you know, you don't want to just go down to the minimum one, right? I mean, that might just not work in some cases. Like, you know, app service is the basic thing, can't do anything. So, like, how do you handle that?
Yeah.
Go ahead, man.
Sure. Yeah. So I did leave out one piece, and that is there are some additional tags that you put on there, and these are per service. Laid out in the documentation, we're using GitHub Pages. So when you go to the repo, you can use the GitHub Pages website that we've built in Doxify. But essentially, you're using, instead of save state, which is how it remembers, set state dash. And that set state is what is going to say, I want to go down to this minimum. And the great thing about those tags, and if you've ever used PowerShell SDK, there are required flags or parameters that you need to put in. There's optional. So we built in the ones that we thought were going to be most effective for the various services that we support so far. Certainly feedback is welcome. But yes, that set state is what going to tell it, what's going to tell that how low do you go and in limbo.
And so you have to, those tags can get pretty complicated, I guess, right? At some point that you set. So you just have to make sure that, I guess, the format is correct and things like that, just so that your application doesn't, the functions don't have a problem reading them. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I will admit one of the things we're doing now is going through and making sure that there's pretty robust error handling in there. And then also you bring up a good point and something we've been concerned about for a long time, which was human error, fat fingering when I'm typing in tags, which is why Tyler mentioned some of the future roadmap is SaaSifying it or really even adding a graphical user interface to take away some of that human error element and make it more simple to consume.
Yeah, where maybe a web page, you can click on these resources I want to scale down to this size, and there's no fat fingering. It just passes that on, or, you know, that's kind of the future iterations we're thinking about.
So what, V3 next week, right?
Yeah. I'm talking tomorrow. Why we got to wait till next week? Exactly. Move.
Yeah.
I think this is very, very useful. I can see that. And I would say not just even for dev tests, right? Even for like QA environment, you know, at a customer, I think it can be very useful for that. I know some of the customers I've worked with, they spend so much money on keeping QA up and running and they don't use it for 90% of the time. So this could be a huge, huge benefit for them as well.
I would take it to prod, Sajid. I mean, like,
you're making them nervous. I can see.
I'm all for it. I just don't want to be saying like this is all for prod. This is strictly for dev test workloads right now.
but I mean, I think if you think about the evolution, right, that's sort of the way to go, because I think, you know, we may have talked about this before, but if I take exactly what I'm running on prem and I run it in the cloud 100% of the time, it's might even be more expensive. At best, it might be just as expensive. Right. In a lot of cases, it's more, because what the cloud gives you is the ability to scale out, scale in, scale up, scale down. And if you don't ever take advantage of that, you're missing that opportunity.
And right. There's opportunities to integrate with other services of ours as well, because, you know, you bring up a good point in looking towards, you know, the future and production workloads. If we could stitch this together with AI ML in ways to analyze what production workloads look like and build a predictable model to be like, we need to scale down here to save this money, like, they could be really powerful for, you know, looking forward. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
I think this also is important in our role as CSAs, because when we work with customers, part of what we do is obviously make sure that their experience is good, they're able to consume the resources that they have committed to in Azure. Additionally, to look for new opportunities where we can help them improve their processes and their infrastructure by migrating to Azure. But an important part of that balance right there of scale is we also need to be cognizant that we want to be cost effective for the customer, and to know that by saving them money, it doesn't mean, you know, we're never going to see that. That helps build trust, because it helps me understand that, number one, the folks of Microsoft and my CSAs are concerned about helping me migrate to the cloud, which is important, but also make sure that I'm answering to my CFO correctly, and that everything is hunky-dory and we're able to continue down that journey of adopting cloud because it's not costing us an arm and a leg.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So this thing is publicly available on the GitHub, right? The instructions are all included, as you said, in the GitHub pages, I believe is what you said. Yep. And so it should be fairly easy for somebody to just pick this up and deploy it to their subscription and get going.
Yep.
And how does the what is your cadence for updates? You guys regularly
tomorrow,
take pull requests, right? Or you know, how does that work?
Execute committed. Yes. So one more item on the deploy script. We did try and incorporate a lot of checks. So I've done a million deploy scripts from GitHub before, and I swear if every single one of them didn't explode at some point, just, you know, hey, it worked in dev. What I tried to do is really make sure that it's doing things like checking for the version of PowerShell, checking to make sure the version of Azure PowerShell SDK is there, making sure you have .NET SDK installed because it does build the function live. That's constantly changing. So I want to make sure when a customer deploys it, that it's a fresh build, a publish of that .NET application. And so I try to make sure all of that's covered to hopefully, cross my fingers, give a good experience for everybody that they know that what am I missing? Why is this blowing up? The second piece is, our focus right now is really to make it robust in the sense that we want documentation to be really good and readable, because if you look at a project and you want to commit to it or use it and you can't really decipher the documentation, in my mind, I'm like, well, I'm not using this because I'm going to spend so many cycles trying to figure out what they were thinking. It's not worth it. So we tried to make that really, really robust and an integral part of adding functionality to Bellhop. And then the second piece is, we want to make this a community driven. As Tyler pointed out, the engine and the scalar function itself really never change. It's the scalars that are going to be modified or added on a regular cadence, hopefully. And we want to make that, and part of the documentation, making that a easy process for anyone to pick up Bellhop and go, I love the idea. I wish it had this scalar. Guess what? Here's the framework to build a new scalar, fill in the blanks, upload.
Yep.
And this may be a little bit like Inception, but can Bellhop scale up and down itself?
That's an interesting question. I haven't tagged the Bellhop infrastructure itself yet.
Realistically,
silly.
you bring up a good point. Realistically, I think we have it built out in the ARM template with premium functions and a couple of other things, because you may want to do things like private VNet integration. But realistically, you can go on a simple consumption plan. You don't need anything fancy for this. The only difference there is you won't have things like private VNet integration, and you won't have the hot instances spun up. So if you go through a scaling operation, you may have to wait a little bit for all of that to kind of chug along. Instead of with premium, I can say I want, you know, 5 ready at all time, depending on how often you're doing that scale operation. So
this probably falls into that category, Sajid, of if Bellhop is the dominant price factor of your infrastructure, you probably ought to think about some other way. Yeah.
It's not like to engineer a product so expensive to save you money. That,
Wait a minute. I thought that was the business model of some.
Yeah. You give me $1,000 and I give you 6.
Yeah, exactly.
We kicked around the idea of, like, when we SaaSify this, like, scale your resources, dollar per resource per month or something like that. Like, make it very, very accessible.
Yeah, no, this is cool. I love the way that I actually serious kudos to you guys on the architecture, because I think I've seen lots of other, you know, not necessarily similar things, but, you know, similar efforts in different areas, right? Not necessarily all the way around scaling, but, you know, every time I look at them, they're like, man, like, I could extend this, but man, this is like, I gotta, you know, recompile it and then extend it and add these class libraries and whatever. And, you know, the architecture you guys have built, like, you know, whatever, 70-80% of what you've built, I don't ever have to touch, right? I just have to touch this one thing if I have this one resource type that you don't cover. Yep. Right at that point, and then it just works.
You're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great. I mean, again, that's really. I'm guessing that's where the architecture part of your titles, you know, come in. But like that's the side of piece that I think some people miss a lot. So I think major kudos to you guys for thinking that direction as well.
Thank you. It was definitely a guiding principle for us. That, you know, I think we all sat down and said, if we're going to do this, we want to make sure that it is a framework and that it is extensible. Because, like you said, I think Tyler and I, in the process of this, have had a number of conversations where everyone goes, oh, I built a script like that the other day for such and such customer. Oh, I built a script like that. It's like,
and it's a one-off, right?
Yeah. You built a one-off script. Everyone's building a one-off script. How can I reuse that? Oh, well, you can't. It's built for this one use case. And then I said, we don't want to do that, right? If we're going to solve a problem, we're going to solve it in a way that is scalable.
Yeah. Flexible as possible.
Nice. Cool. Excellent. Now, great work, guys.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come on and explain this to us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks.
When you SaaSify, we expect you back on, you know.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.